Hello everyone, thanks once again for joining me on another episode of my parenting podcast. Delighted to be here with you again today, and I want to talk to you today about the importance of learning about your child's brain development. Sounds like a big task, that, doesn't it? But I take one step back, because it does make me chuckle when I come out of this, but I do believe that when you decide what career you want to go into, you decide which uni to go to, you decide which course to take, you train for 3 years, whether you're a teacher, a chartered accountant, air conditioning, whether you're a beauty therapist, I'm thinking all the things that my family do here, you know, depending on which career you want to go into, you do training. You spend 3 years training all the tricks of the trade, learning all the ins and outs. There is no point in me trying to go and be a tax advisor when I have no idea about the ins and outs of all sorts of tax that there possibly could be. No point in me going and being a carpenter because I'd have no idea which way around to saw a piece of wood, or, you know, it's obviously more complex than that. But why is it then? Why is it that we can have a child and we have no training whatsoever in how to understand our child pre-7? Not even pre-7, you know, you're talking about a developing brain, a brand new brain that won't actually be fully formed into an adult brain until they're at least 23. And research is saying it's slightly later than that. But generally, I work with parents, families, children who are in their early years. So anything from birth to 7. And I have a really good understanding of that developing child and that developing brain. And there are so many people that I see, and it's no one's fault in a million years, but I see so many people have a baby and then, you know, we're just expected to know what to do. We're just expected to know what to do at nighttime when you're completely sleep deprived, or suddenly they hit what is termed the terrible threes, which I can't stand personally. When you understand child development and brain development, they're not terrible at all at three. They're doing what they do and what comes naturally to them. So my primarily work with children pre-7 because I've got a really good understanding of their brain development at that point. But at no point when we're a parent and we're finding things get really tough, obviously from birth, if you're having a little one who is finding sleep difficult or eating difficult or resting or crying or whatever, there's all sorts of things. You're suddenly pushed to the limit on something that you have no idea how to manage. And the only way you learn how to be a parent is what you've picked up, maybe from a couple of books that suddenly when you were pregnant, you're like, oh, I must read these books now. Let's read it. Or from the only way that you were parented and the style of parenting that you were brought up with. And of course, at that time, you were a child. So it's not that you were learning how to be a parent. You were just a child and you were interacted with by your parents in a way that probably they did exactly the same thing. So they learned how to parent through their parents, through any books and tips and tricks they picked up. But it's like throwing us into a surgeon's surgery and saying, right, OK, let's perform brain surgery here. You'd be looking at someone as if to say, what? There's no way that you could pick up any tool in there and know exactly what to do on someone's brain to do brain surgery. Yet somehow we can look after this very, very important brand new brain, and somehow you have to learn how to interact with it. And so that's my job. That's where I've come in, because I want to make sure that as many people out there as possible really understand brain development pre-7, because essentially what happens pre-7 is that the brain is in what we call a theta mode. So it's almost like a hypnosis meditative state. And it's like having a brand new computer. You turn your computer on and it's got all the basic functionings on that computer. So, you know, you've got files ready to be filled up. It knows how to get onto Google. You've got various things that are just set up, ready to go, ready for when you push that on button, that you know that you can start filling this computer up with information. That's exactly the same as a child's brain. So they have a very basic functioning. I say basic, it's amazing, isn't it, really, that a baby can go from being born and within a year they're up and walking, and all the things they do in between. It's absolutely phenomenal what the brain has the ability to do. So it's like having a brand new computer system, in the fact that your baby is born to know how to do all the basic functionings to keep them alive, to keep them in survival mode. So they'll know how to eat, they'll know how to breathe, they'll know how to sleep, they'll know how to move. It's just an instinct that's in their brain. Everything else between when they're born and seven and beyond, of course, but my specialism is up until seven, is everything is like having the computer programs on all the files on a computer are ready to be filled up. So when our child learns how to interact with the outside world, everything that we give them, everything that we do for them, everything, how we interact with our children essentially, gets stored in to different computer files. And I see it that when they go to sleep, it's their brain's way of putting all of the stuff that they've learned into these files, into this computer system. And it tells them how they should then behave and interact and develop in life. And because 95% of our brain is run on subconscious, unconscious programming, that 95% has come from the earliest years of our children's lives. So if children have had unfortunately, those little ones have had a traumatic upbringing, that program will show them when they're older how they interact. So that's where all our limiting beliefs are. I don't want to go into that side of things too much, but this is where different programmings can have different ideas as to, you know, what you think you're good at, what you think you're not good at. Might be somebody when you were at school said something like, sit down, be quiet, and don't say something like that. That then forms a program in your brain to say, okay, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to react like that again. And it's I'm not sure I'm explaining myself very well on this, because I don't really want to go into that side of things. But basically, your brain starts programming all of this information and these limiting beliefs like, am I good enough? Am I worthy enough? Am I safe enough? They're all the programs that start kind of building. So coming back to my point here today, it's really, really important that the interactions that you have with your child pre-seven are as good as they possibly can be. And then, of course, there's one side of it, understanding their brain. And then, of course, you will have your own limiting beliefs that you grow up with. And possibly I might have triggered some there in what I was saying, whether you feel good enough, whether you feel that people are looking at you, whether you feel conscious about something. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold today. You then will naturally get triggered by your child when they are having a tantrum, they're having a meltdown, or they're saying no, and you want them to do something and they don't want to do it, and they're pushing every boundary. You lose your cool, you lose your calm, you start shouting at them. But of course, essentially, you coming in and shouting at them actually forms, children won't ever think, okay, mum's in a bit of a mood today, she's having a bit of a shouting match at me, it's all right, it's because she's got so much on her plate right now that she's having a go at me. Children won't understand any of that. They will literally just take on board the fact that mum's shouting at me, I must be wrong, because their brain is in a downloadable state at the moment. So anything that they're given, any information that they're given, must be right. And therefore the brain starts working to make sure that it's the brain's only job is to keep us alive, to keep us in survival mode. It doesn't care whether you're having a nice time. It doesn't care whether you're meeting your goals. It just cares about keeping you safe. So the child won't be thinking, oh, mum's had a bad day, therefore she's a bit stressed. All right, well, let's not take that on board. The brain literally will just take on board, mum's shouting at me, I must have done something wrong. Okay, let's store that in one of my little files over here. And let's just make sure that I never go there again. Let's just make sure that I don't ever upset mum again. So I'm just going to sit quietly, you know. So it's just really, really important that we really start understanding what the child's brain does. So that's what I really want to talk to you about. So the slight bit of training that I can give you today, of course, is the fact that a child has a developed brain. So an adult brain has, we all have an upstairs brain and a downstairs brain. This comes from Dan Siegel's work and Tina Payne Bryson. And, you know, they are phenomenal in understanding brain development. And I talk a lot about the upstairs and downstairs brain because, you know, it's the simplest form to understand. And essentially, in the child's down and anyone's downstairs brain, it's all about flight or fight, big emotions, acting before you think. And essentially, it's our brain's way. Donkeys years ago, when we were cavemen, their job was to go out, be the hunter, come back with food, and that's that. So the brain was developed in a way that if you were faced with any saber-toothed tiger or a bear or something and you had to run away, the brain developed in a way that automatically made you run away. So that downstairs brain, when we talk about flight or fight, when we get that panic on or that, you know, that nervous feeling and we're in an argument with somebody and you start flying around and, you know, you come back at them or you fight or whatever, that's that. Our brain hasn't actually evolved and moved on from that stage of being a caveman. And essentially that flight or fight risk is always there. And that is super developed straight away in a child's brain, in a baby's brain, which you can understand then why when they're working in a moment and then suddenly they have a meltdown because all you've said is put your shoes on. That is because their downstairs brain is in full action of, no, I don't want to do that. This isn't fair. I'm going to have a complete meltdown about this. The reason children have a complete meltdown about this is because their upstairs brain is the bit that's under construction until they're a full on adult. After 7, it starts going into a different mode. After 12, it starts going into a different mode. And then, of course, on to later teens and then adulthood and what have you. But the upstairs brain is all about thinking before you act. Looking at empathy, looking at like warming emotions and really tuning into other people's feelings as well as your own. Of course, that's under construction. So for a little one that is reaching this very delicate age, up to 7 years old, they've got this brain downstairs that will trigger at anything. Now, you can relate to that big time, I'm sure, because, you know, if you've asked them to put their shoes on, they don't want to put their shoes on. You ask them to put their coat on, they don't want to put their coat on. It's not a case of like, oh, okay, mum's asking me to put my coat on, I understand what she's saying, it's a bit chilly outside. That's all your rational thinking brain coming into play, but theirs isn't there. If they don't want to move away from that activity and they're having a great time and they don't want to put their coat on, 99% of the time they're going to have a meltdown over it. And I bet after 18 months, that's when children really start, you know, they're up on their feet. It's a big wide world out there. It's very, very exciting. They've realised that they can move from one place to another. And all of a sudden, you know, you start getting the terrible twos, the terrible threes. What is, you know, it's a dreadful expression, really, because when you understand how to interact with a brain that is 2 years old and a brain that is 3 years old, life becomes so much easier, I have to say, because when you understand that the upstairs brain is under construction and the downstairs brain is fully functioning, there's no way that a child is ever going to think reasonably when you say we've got to stop doing this now and we're going to go and get ready for bed. That if they don't think that's fair, if they don't think they want to move away from that activity, their upstairs brain is literally going to go, tuning out now, I'm not interested in this anymore, you just crack on. And the downstairs brain won't be able to communicate with the upstairs brain. They literally go, no, this is not fair, I'm going to have a meltdown, I'm going to have a tantrum. And that's that's where I get involved an awful lot, because it comes to a stage for most people, because we've not done this training in the beginning, because we've not gone to university and learned how to deal with a 0 to 7 year old's brain. What do? You start resorting back, of course. If you've got your 2, 3 year old constantly having meltdowns, it's exhausting for one. Of course it is. But you're going to start resorting to old style, old school parenting styles, and you're going to start losing your rag because you're working with your own limiting beliefs and trying to get so much stuff done in the day. You're going to work, you've got the house, you've got the cooking, you've got the cleaning, you've got all those kind of pressures going on. And then suddenly you've got a 3 year old that's having a meltdown every single time they fancy it, every time you say, can you do this? And you end up trying to give in all the time, which actually doesn't help the child at all. Or you come down on them so hard that they get shouted at and they get sent away, they get sent to their room, you can't handle it anymore. But of course, what's happening in their brain is they're still programming absolutely everything that's coming on board. So when they hear shouting, don't do this, get upstairs to your room, don't you dare have a meltdown, don't speak to me like that, get up there or else, or these really old style. I mean, yeah, I like to think that we are not smacking our children. That's another podcast to be had, I think. But I strongly disagree with anybody even thinking that reasonable force is OK with a child. It is not, in my opinion, it is just not. Because it creates very lasting, damaging thoughts, really. You know, I was smacked by my mum. It was just the way it was in those days. And did she love me? Of course she did love me very, very much. And I never blame her for it. But knowing what I know now, I just think you do not need to interact with your child at a time. Children have the same emotions as we do at the end of the day. They just don't know how to manage them because their upstairs brain clocks out every time they have a tantrum. Whereas we understand that when we're feeling a bit miffed off with somebody, our reasoning brain, logical thinking brain upstairs, is the one that kicks in and says, do you really need to get annoyed about this? Is this really worth getting so annoyed about? And then you start reasoning with yourself and think, well, actually, no, probably not. I might just have a chat with them and have a reasonable conversation. Children don't have that ability. They just don't. So they don't have their upstairs brain going, you all right about that? You know, do you really not want to go to bed? Of course you do. You've had a busy, really busy day. They will just literally, their upstairs brain goes to sleep almost. Downstairs brain goes, not fair. And they just kick off big time. Whereas we have that ability not to kick off every single time something doesn't go away. We are emotionally intelligent and we do understand how to manage our own feelings and be empathetic towards someone else's feelings. Whereas children don't have that ability. So it seems really then unfair when we know this and understand this. Seems really, really unfair that if they don't have that ability to really reason with us as to why they don't want to put their toys away and go to bed and they have a complete meltdown, while we then interact with them the way we do, it seems really unfair that then they get shouted at. And it's only because you're resorting to the fact that at the end of the day, you didn't do a degree to know how to look after your child when they're in these moments. You know, the poor child at the end of the day gets the blame. You then, if they're biting or hitting out at nursery or at school, then of course you've got people coming in saying, oh, you know, we're not prepared to put up with this behaviour. But of course, 90%, I increase that now, you say 70%, but 90% of how children will succeed in the world comes from parenting. It comes from the way you're brought up. Some people still think that, you know, all of the education comes from school. But when we're talking about emotional intelligence, for me, that is far greater from birth to seven to learn than to ever focus on academic achievement at that point. We could seriously, if we focused on personal, social, emotional development wholeheartedly between the child when a child is 0 and 7, they would still grow and develop and have all the academic achievement in the world and go on to be whatever they want to be in their career, do all their degrees. They will have the ability to do that and go on. Because can you imagine somebody who is emotionally intelligent and they're academic? It's kind of, sometimes it's either one or the other. And I think if we focused on emotional intelligence up until they're 7 and then we started introducing academic achievement after that, it, you know, we'd have really well-conditioned, well-rounded adults that really understand, you know, leadership and understand how to interact with people. excuse me, I'm going to have a quick drink. They really learn how to interact with people and understand their own emotions and how they conduct themselves within society, as it were. But, you know, it's again, it's a whole different ball game, but that doesn't tend to happen, really. But I think that my message out is really understand your child between 0 and 7. Really focus on emotional intelligence in that time. And the way to do it, we can go into this in quite a lot of detail, but basically there are three elements that I always teach. And number one is to learn about yourself. Because when you're in these moments where you're getting triggered, you can't help it because your upstairs brain is becoming less reasoning because you're tired, you're exhausted, you've got loads going on. You know, you just want them to go to bed. You just want them to stop it. Just want them to put their coat on. And of course, you're getting triggered. So your downstairs brain, your flight or fight and big emotions are being triggered. But you have to really learn, and there's loads of different strategies that we do to get to this point, but you really have to learn how to ground into how you're feeling, step out, take a moment out, take some big deep breaths, take some time out so that you can self-regulate, so you can come back down to earth, because we always have to remember that we can do this, whereas our children can't do this. So they don't have the ability to do that, to self-regulate. They have to regulate by co-regulating with us. They can only do that with us. So if they're in a state of flight or fight and they're having big emotions and they're having a meltdown, and then you're having a meltdown alongside them, all you're doing is mirror imaging them. And all you're doing is showing them that when you're cross and angry, that's how you behave. You know, and it what you want to do, if you're the one, again, I heard this lovely quote, I keep using it at the moment, but you're out at sea and you are drowning. The last person you need is somebody to come out there and panic with you. You want someone to come out there, take control. Come on, I've got you, mate. Let's go and bring them in. You know, that's the sort of person that you want with you. And children are no different. They just don't know that. They just don't know that. They need you at that point of their complete and utter meltdown to remain as calm as possible. And I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not easy, but I am saying it's totally achievable when you learn how to do the strategies yourself to be able to self-control, self-regulate, and then go in, call it into battle if you like, whatever. But you go in there, you go strong, you help your child, you remain as calm as possible. And it's all very, you know, it depends how the child reacts when they're in this sort of meltdown. Some children I've known don't want you anywhere near them when they're in that state. Some children just want to have a meltdown and they're cuddling you. Some I've had children before that just want you to hold their hand. But primarily, what you must do is keep as calm as possible. I'm off again. I've got the cold. Keep as calm as possible and go and help them ride out the wave, you know, because the calmer you are, the flight or fight red mist that has come down, we have to get that back down to zero. We have to get them back down to calm. And again, I'm not saying that if they've suddenly been lashing out at you and or hitting you, kicking you or whatever. Of course, we don't want that. And there is a time and a place to learn that lesson and to guide them and show them that, you know, when you are cross, if you're feeling yourself getting cross and angry, I do this with my children now. I had a little boy recently, actually, that I was working with. And he every time I walked past, he just kicked me. And so I went right down to his level and I looked at him. I just held his hand gently and I said to him, I don't like to be kicked. It doesn't make me feel very good. So I didn't blame him. I didn't put any of the emotion on him. I said, what I don't like, not I don't like you doing that, because that's not nice and you're not making me feel good. He won't be able to understand and comprehend that because of the way his brain is developing. So I take all that emotion and say, I don't like being kicked. How about next time I see you, we do a high five, we do a wave. And he kind of looked at me as if I was mad, to be honest with you. But I thought somewhere along the line that will go in. And because I wasn't telling him off, I wasn't sitting him out, I wasn't shouting at him. I just got down at his level, looked in his eyes and just said, what I don't like. So I was teaching him about my emotions, what I don't like. I don't like being interacted with like that. And then I was saying to him, right, next time I see you, we do a wave or we do a high five. And, you know, honestly, since then, when I see him, I make a point of calling his name and I wave. And 9 times out of 10, he'll just do a little wave. And I know that it's gone in there somewhere, that if he felt safe and secure at that point, for whatever reason, he was coming and kicking me. Maybe I walked the wrong way, or you never know with children, do you? You don't know if you breathe the wrong way sometimes. But, you know, whatever I had triggered him, he then reacted to me. But because I understand what was going on in his brain at that point, he needed to see something different from me. And actually, it's proved its worth, because I called his name and we have a little wave at each other. And I think the whole point to this whole podcast as well is that, one, we have to have a very good understanding of brain development, child development. It's essential. If you're going to have a baby, it is so essential. It's all very lovey-dovey and wonderful when they're first born, and it's beautiful and everything else. And you've been told it's going to be tough and it's going to be hard, and you get it, it's going to be hard. When you're actually in it and you're really stressed and you're triggered and you cannot get them to do what you want, you've got to get out of the door, you know, so many things, it's going to change. It's going to change. But if you have a good understanding of child development and brain development, if you have a good understanding of what triggers you and how you can ground yourself to self-regulate yourself to be able to go into battle and help them co-regulate with you to bring them back down to earth, and then you can start talking about what happened later. And if you have a really good set of strategies and tools, which we, you know, it's all very bespoke to each child, because as I say before, some children will want you to sit with them, some children won't. We have to tailor make things around the way your child is developing and what makes them triggered and what helps them calm, because everybody's got a very different way. It's not one size fits all at all. So they're the three things that you have to really learn when you have a baby, and particularly really understanding that the way their brain is developing is completely and utterly different to ours. And if you really understand that you've got a blank computer, I'm off again, hang on. If you really understand that you've got a brand new computer and you are about to fill up that computer with everybody's computer is different, isn't it? So, you know, you look on my computer, I've usually got about 1,000 tabs open, of course, on 1,000 tabs open, but everybody has their own files. So whatever is bespoke to you, whatever your work is, whatever files you've got, the photos, how that's set up, everything you input, and the computer just takes it. It just literally takes it on board and it stores it for you. Of course, what we've got is a child on our hands, and yes, they're exactly the same. They've got the basic brain development, but all of that emotion and all of that learning and understanding and interaction with them is filing away. And that's what determines how a child grows up, what limiting beliefs they have, what emotional state they're in. And that's the bit that I think that we really need to understand. So that's what I'm on a mission to do, to make sure that you understand what goes on in a brain and how to interact with that brain when things are tough. It's all right interacting with a brain when you're cuddling up and having a lovely story. That's no problem. But what happens when you've got a little brain that is going, not fair, I'm going to have an absolute tantrum and a meltdown for the umpteenth time today, and you're just about at your wit's end, what are you going to do then? So it's really, really worth learning about brain development of children pre-7, I think. And that's what I've got for you today. So do excuse my coldy kind of podcast episode. You know, I'm off again. I'm doing it again. I've got a cold. I didn't want to not put an episode out there. I'm not keen on editing it, and I'm sure it will all come. And of course, my podcast will be relaunched at some point, which I'm working towards, which I'm very much looking forward to. I always want to be sharing the best possible advice that I can probably possibly help you with, because I think that there's no course. We should have a course. There should be a course that people go on when you're pregnant. That should be the first thing that you do. You go out and buy books and stuff. So why not do a course to learn about how to interact with your child's brain between 0 and 7? I think that would be something I should be working on. Anyway, have a lovely day. If you find this podcast useful, do link it or share it with someone else who might enjoy it as well. And if you've got any comments for me, come and let me know. Okay, take care, everyone. See you.